You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Some 50th birthdays are celebrated with a surprise party or the purchase of a hot sports car or a trip to Las Vegas. John Hans celebrated his 50th by running a marathon in Antarctica. He describes the allure of the South Pole in his new book, The Coolest Race on Earth, Mud, Mad Men, Glaciers, and Grannies at the Antarctica Marathon. It's published by Chicago Review Press, and I'm delighted that it brings John Hans to this show today. Hello.
Hello, Leonard. Nice to be here.
Now, you were already an avid runner when you signed up for the Antarctic Marathon. How many marathons had you participated in?
I did about 20 up to that point, and this seemed like a nice round number to add sort of cherry to the top of the cake.
Had you started as a recreational runner and then just graduated to marathons?
Exactly. The typical progression of most runners. I started running just to sort of stay in shape, and I got kind of hooked and went further and further, and soon the marathon bug had bit me.
Well, Boston, Chicago, New York, but Antarctica? Aren't most marathons run in the spring and the fall when it's comfortable to run? Wouldn't it be much more difficult to run in extreme cold or extreme heat for that matter?
Yes, indeed it would. Although the interesting thing about the Antarctica Marathon, the one that I did, was that on the day we ran, February 28th, 2005, it was actually colder in New York.
Summertime in the southern hemisphere, but even down there?
Yeah, it was 37 degrees when we started. It got colder, but that was one of the many surprising aspects of this race.
Well, Antarctica is one of the places scientists say global warming is most evident. Maybe that's why it was warmer there.
Oh, yes, and we saw great evidence of it. I mean, the mud that went up to my ankles was evidence of that.
Is there an annual marathon in the South Pole, like New York, Boston, Chicago?
Well, this race is held now annually, but it's not in the South Pole. Again, this is one of the things that when I first heard about it, like a lot of people, Leonard, our knowledge of Antarctic geography is somewhat skewed. I can't tell you how many people before I left asked me if I was going to be meeting any Eskimos or polar bears. And, of course, they're not on the South. They're in the North Pole.
And the South Pole is hard to get to.
Yes.
Most people, when they go to Antarctica, they go along the coastline, don't they?
Correct. That's
right.
It's
like Greenland. You don't go inland where there's that ice cap.
Correct. And Antarctica, as you know, is an entire continent, extremely difficult to get to. Where we were is on an island, King George Island, just off the tip of the Antarctic Peninsula, which is the sort of 800-mile tail that sweeps out of the mainland. So we were a long way from the South Pole, but we were in a very godforsaken place.
Now, why did you run on King George Island? Is it more comfortable to run on than the continent itself?
I can't imagine anything being less comfortable to run on than King George Island. It has to do with where the race organizers, as you can imagine, getting permission to run and stage a marathon in Antarctica was a story in itself, and it's an entire chapter in the book, in fact. But the organizer had to work under some pretty strict limitations, and basically after a couple of years of negotiations with the various countries that administer Antarctica, King George Island turned out to be the most viable spot.
Because there is concern about destruction of the environment down there, although we're seeing much more tourism to Antarctica now, concerning an awful lot of scientists.
Absolutely. It is concerning to scientists. It's funny, too. And I kind of have a different take on that. After we came back in 2005, I wrote a story about this for Smithsonian Magazine. And they got a couple of outraged letters about people saying, oh, what, this is terrible, these people running in Antarctica. And I have to say that, first of all, the organizers work under very, and all Antarctic tour operators work under very strict guidelines. We weren't allowed to bring anything onto that island that we didn't take off. But a writer named Rolf Smith, and I mentioned him in my book, he spent considerable time in Antarctica, and he came away saying that he thought limited tourism was good because he said the tourists actually seemed to appreciate Antarctica more than the scientific community, and he made a good point. He said they don't leave permanent bases.
Wasn't this marathon originally called the last marathon?
Yes, that's absolutely right. When the organizer, a gentleman named Tom Gilligan, who's a travel agent in Boston, of all things, when he decided to start this race, he called it the last marathon because, as he says, I thought it was the last place anyone would ever hold a marathon.
And how long ago did he do that?
1995 was the first year the race was held.
So we've had 13?
Because the first couple of years it was every other year. Now it's every year because of the demand. So this year's race, which will be on March 10th, will be the 10th edition.
You're right that the marathon is a very American endeavor. Can you explain what you mean by that? Because as far as I can tell, it's really a Kenyan endeavor, judging from who wins in New York.
They are certainly the most adept at it, the Kenyans and the Ethiopians. And our trip was very international. There was a Russian crew involved. There was an Australian expedition organization. A lot of South Americans were involved. But by that, I meant that the running marathons, whether in Antarctica or through the five boroughs, seems to be an American pastime in the sense that where else would you get people actually wanting to run 26.2 miles, including a lot of people who really aren't well suited to do it, and feel that this would become sort of an ennobling, self-actualizing event? And it's, of course, here where it really took off as a mass participation event.
Although it does, it did begin in ancient Greece.
Yes.
And we don't see any Greek marathoners of any importance.
No, it's kind of unfortunate. And even though we know the Pheidippides story, which we kind of dutifully retold in this book, is somewhat of a legend, certainly the first modern marathon was held at the first modern Olympic Games.
My guest is John Hantz, H-A-N-C. His book, The Coolest Race on Earth, Mud, Madmen, Glaciers, and Grannies at the Antarctica Marathon, published by Chicago Review Press. You call this race a midlife adventure to beat the band. What are we saying here? That this was a way of dealing with your midlife crisis?
Well, I kind of tongue-in-cheek, sort of what you alluded to at the top of this segment, that some guys go to Vegas, some guys buy a hot sports car, some people have affairs. I decided to go to Antarctica. It just seemed like something exciting, something different, a nice way to spend my 50th birthday.
Although with a lot more rigorous, the trip takes a while.
Oh, the trip
could
was
very
rigorous.
Could you fly down there?
You can fly to certain areas on the mainland of the continent. To get where we went, we had to go by ship. We flew to Buenos Aires, then flew from Buenos Aires to Ushuaia, the city on the very tip of South America in Argentina, and then we boarded a ship there and sailed for over two full days across the Drake Passage into Antarctica, and we basically lived on the ship for the 2 weeks.
And you say you're somebody who likes to be pampered. You like weekly massages, personal trainer, but you were roughing it here.
Yes, not like some Antarctic explorers have, but by my standards, by my Long Island suburban standards, we were really roughing it.
Were the same sort of people that you would see at a New York or a Boston marathon there? Did you recognize anybody?
Yes, that's a great question. There were certainly some. Most of the people there, I would say, had probably done a big race like the ones you mentioned, but some of them were people who now eschewed that. They didn't want any part of the big races. They deliberately sought off-the-beaten-path events.
What about the grannies you refer to in your subtitle? How many grandmothers were in the race?
The exact number of grandmas, I am not certain of, but I know about three of them, and their story was a pretty interesting one. They actually, the day of the race, one of them was running the race. The other two were there to support her, and these three grandmas had met in 2000 on an around-the-world bike tour. So they had biked on all six continents except for Antarctica. And they decided that day they spotted a bike in one of the bases that are on King George, and they decided to actually get on the bike and ride around the gym. So unofficially, they all, including the one who ran the marathon, became the first three women to ride a bike on all seven continents.
Although they couldn't ride on the track for the marathon because
No.
You said there was mud and...
That's right.
It got pretty
That's
awful.
Right. Oh, yeah. It was miserable, miserable conditions.
What kind of training do you have to do for something like this? Did you feel prepared?
No, I felt woefully unprepared. I thought it was a great idea to just run on my treadmill in my basement and watch videos. I watched The Last Race on Earth, the PBS version of the Roland Huntford book about Scott and Shackleton, or Scott and Amundsen, which is a great thing to watch, but did not really prepare me to run on mud, up glaciers, and across rocks.
Wait, but they got, didn't they get trapped in a ship in the ice?
Yeah, no, that was Shackleton. Oh. But yeah, this was Scott. This was worse. Scott died, so that was pretty harrowing watching that on my treadmill. No, I think, Leonard, the best preparation for this, one of the runners, and we mentioned this in the book, was a woman named Ingrid Hall. She was a British Army officer. She trained in the Midlands of England and ran in a lot of mud on trails. And that seems to be the best preparation for a race like this.
And you say that about a quarter mile into the race, you realized it was going to be harder than you thought.
Yes.
Did you consider throwing in the towel?
No, because I had just come that far, so far, and there was so much involved. But I did consider never running another marathon after that.
Have you?
I've run five. Yes. And that's not many. Some of the people down there are marathon collectors. You know, people collect stamps and butterflies. Some people collect marathons.
This is like climbing mountains.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, very much so. In fact, I wrote a story subsequent to this book in which I actually mentioned her in the book. There was a woman last year who did the Antarctica Marathon and in doing so became the first woman to run a marathon on all seven continents and climb the highest peak on all seven continents. So she had actually been to Antarctica before and climbed the highest peak there, the Vison Mastif, I think is how you pronounce it. So now you have people going for double records, marathons and mountains.
I don't know why that strikes me as odd, but it does. In the end, I could see running a marathon because it could be something where you stay fit. But if it's really all about collecting records, well, I don't know. I'd rather eat all the hot dogs I can in 2 minutes and win that one.
There are probably runners who would agree with you. You know, the reactions I got from this were very polarized. People either thought it was a wonderful, exciting adventure or they thought I was nuts.
After the race, you went through what you call post-marathon depression. Is that typical for marathoners?
Actually, when I did some research for the book, I found out that it is. And I think there have actually been a couple of studies done to show that people tend to – you know, I think it's more, you know, instinctual. After any big moment in your life, there's a little bit of a letdown. But I felt it particularly there.
But they also talk about endorphins giving runners a certain amount of pleasure.
Yes.
And then when you're finished running, of course, the endorphins are no longer there.
That's right. You
can – it's like being high and then suddenly losing the high.
And that may be part of it. I know that for me, I didn't feel any endorphin rush at all down in Antarctica. I just felt tired, miserable, wet, cold, and wanted it to be done.
And it also cost you a lot.
It costs an average of about $5,000 to $6,000. I'm not sure what it costs now. But yeah, actually, because there's about 200 people doing it, it's a little less expensive than one might think, but certainly a significant expenditure.
We're talking about a huge investment emotionally,
yes.
Physically, and
yes.
Financially.
And in time also. You have to take basically 3 weeks out of your life to do this.
Now, you've said that as the baby boom generation ages, interest in marathons is expected to decrease.
Well, that's the viewpoint of one guy who has studied this, Ron Waters at Boise State, and a very interesting academic who studies these trends in outdoor sports. He thinks that after the baby boomers and the Gen Xers move on, that these kind of adventure marathons, he's not predicting that people won't still want to run, as you mentioned earlier, for fitness or do a marathon to run the New York City Marathon as a goal, but he predicts that these offbeat adventure marathons, Mount Everest, Antarctica, South Pole, that the interest there might wane.
There also are people are turning to other competitive sports that are similar but also challenging in different ways. For example, I've heard that there is a huge increase in women age 40 plus participating in triathlons.
Yeah, triathlon is red hot, and it's an offshoot of running. There were a number of triathletes in this event. But I should add this one thing that's interesting, Leonard, is that participation in marathons and half marathons continues to grow unabated, whether in Antarctica or in New York City or Chicago. So clearly there are still a lot of people interested in it.
And that despite the fact that this can cost a lot of money. You said over $5,000, but even for other people, it costs a lot of money to train. And then if they're coming to New York, so many of the marathoners are coming from other parts of the world.
That's right.
I'd imagine that the recession is going to have some kind of impact.
Actually, I think it's a pretty cheap sport compared to others. One of the good things about running is really all you need to do it, aside from travel, et cetera, is basically a decent pair of shoes, as opposed to triathlon, as opposed to skiing or many other sports. So I think the saying is that running is fairly recession-proof. I guess we'll see over the next couple of years.
Did the five marathons you've run since you returned from Antarctica feel anticlimactic? That wasn't a pun, by the way.
In some ways, yes. Although they were sort of a relief, I could just focus on the marathon and not the whole marathon travel just to get there.
So what happens now? I mean,
good question. And people have asked me.
Are you going to go back?
No, I don't think. You never say never. If the right opportunity presented itself, maybe. But no, I think there are other places I'd rather go and run marathons in.
And you'll keep doing it until your knees run out?
My knees are fine, and I think that's actually been proven as somewhat of a myth about running.
Are there other exotic marathon locations?
Oh, yes, all over. There's a marathon on Mount Everest, the lower part of Mount Everest. That's one of the guys that I wrote about in the Antarctica book then did. There's there's a marathon called the Bataan Death March Marathon in the deserts of New Mexico. There's beautiful ones like the Big Sur Marathon along the coast, which I'd like to do. So there are some very exotic and wonderful marathons.
That's a very narrow road, rather dangerous to drive a car on. I'd be afraid to be having somebody push me. John Hance is a contributing editor to Runner's World and has published in the New York Times, Smithsonian, Family Circle, Newsday, Boston Globe magazine. He also teaches writing at the New York Institute of Technology in Old Westbury. And his latest book, I guess this is your eighth, is The Coolest Race on Earth, Mud, Mad Men, Glaciers, and Grannies at the Antarctica Marathon, published by Chicago Review Press. And I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much, Leonard.